Hey, you guys. Welcome back to Flickers of Fear, continuing on with the very, very fun Giallo July. And we're talking about probably one of my favorite Giallo or Giallo adjacent films today. So let me say, okay, so while the Giallo genre as a whole has a fairly rigid set of tropes that most films that are called Giallo films, you know, that fall within those parameters that they adhere to. You got your masked killer with the gloves, you got your murder mystery element, your kind of like police investigation or your amateur police investigation. You got ultra-violent killings committed with bladed weapons and so forth. That isn't to say that some directors didn't try to do something a little bit different within the confines of the style. For example, introducing supernatural or surrealistic elements, or making the story less about solving a series of interconnected murders as focusing on one protagonist and maybe one kind of determined madman that's out to get them. So one movie that does both of these things, with actually smashing success, at least in my opinion, is the movie we're going to be talking about today. And this is a particularly, it's very gothic and it's very hallucinogenic nightmare style of movie that has a bunch of actors that will be familiar to anyone that is versed in this genre at all. You have Edvige Fenech, George Hilton, Maria Malfatti, lots and lots of faces that you'll recognize. So this movie is called All the Colors of the Dark. It came out in 1972. And it was an Italian-Spanish co-production, but was set in London. Now, this was directed by Sergio Martino, who was also responsible for many, many genre classics, among them The Strange Vice of Mrs. Ward, which I think I've talked about on the show, The Case of the Scorpion's Tail, Your Vice is a Locked Room and Only I Have the Key, which I think I've also discussed, and Torso, which I may or may not have discussed, I can't really remember. So All the Colors of the Dark, though, is essentially a kind of groovier, less satirical, and way more surreal take on maybe something like Rosemary's Baby. It has similar themes of black magic, ambiguous reality, and sort of like crushing paranoia, centering on one woman, like a main character, who's never entirely sure if she's losing her mind or if there's kind of like a concentrated conspiracy of nefarious individuals out to get her. You know what I mean? So it's that kind of thing. So what you have at the beginning, you have the beautiful but very mentally fragile female protagonist, Jane, played by Edvige Fenech, who is just ridiculously beautiful. And she always plays, she played a similar kind of role in The Strange Vice of Mrs. Ward. She always plays these kind of very vulnerable, like victim type character. She's very good at it. I think a lot of it is just because she just has that vulnerable looking face. She has those big doe eyes and they always like frame them with like, you know, the luscious, like long fake lashes, which she also sleeps in this movie, which I thought was like very funny. So it's like, she wakes up and I'm just like, wow, she has perfect makeup and fake lashes and everything like that. If I fell asleep in fake lashes, I'd wake up and they'd be like stuck all over my face like that. But that never happens in the movies. You know what I mean? Everybody has to look perfect when they wake up. But yeah, she is stunning. So you can see why she was in a lot of Giallo movies. But she also plays like a lot of those movies because she has like a really good, she's just very good at looking like scared and vulnerable, which she does a lot in this. So Jane here has been going through some shit, to put it mildly. So not only was her mother murdered when she was 5 years old, and I'm sure she's still processing some trauma from that, but a year before the events of this film, she was actually in a car accident in which she suffered a miscarriage. Now, her longtime boyfriend, who is a pharmaceutical rep and also kind of a condescending jackhole, whose name is Richard, he was driving the car, and he sort of, kind of, maybe, feels a little bit responsible for that whole losing the baby thing. I mean, he was the one that, like, slammed the car into the pole, so, you know, he's a little bit responsible. But despite this, he's like, yeah, I'm sure, sorry about that. It doesn't sound real sincere. He still kind of treats Jane like crap anyway. He's pretty dismissive of her concerns about what she fears might be her crumbling sanity, like her emotional vulnerability. And he seems to like prioritize work over Jane's health. Like he's always like, oh, gotta go call that client. Oh, gotta go meet a client. Gotta go on this business trip, blah, blah, blah. I'm working late. You know, leaving her alone incessantly when she, many times when she begs him not to because she thinks thinks she's in danger or she needs somebody there to talk to or something like that. So not super supportive, not a great situation. There's also kind of a conflict between her sister Barbara, who seems to have her best interests at heart, who doesn't really like Richard, and so they're always kind of at loggerheads because they're both arguing about what is best for Jane. So there's that kind of conflict going on in the background as well. Now, Jane's main issue, it seems, is not so much the miscarriage and the resentment she feels toward Richard about the car crash, although that is in there. It's more the fact that ever since that happened, Jane has actually been plagued with these horrific, very Fellini-esque nightmares. Basically, and the movie actually opens with one of these, in which there's like these toothless old ladies like cackling in close up, and then there's this very mysterious, creepy looking dude with these ice blue eyes, and he's repeatedly like stabbing women to death in their beds. I think, like, as you watch the movie, you find out this may or may not be like a recreation, or at least the way she remembered the night her mother was murdered. Because, like I said, she was only 5 when it happened, so these might be some like repressed memories. So these are like buried memories of the past that are kind of bubbling up to torment her since this more recent tragedy, more recent accident. So typically, in true yellow wallpaper fashion, Richard has been pretty much shitting on Jane's wishes to see a psychiatrist. And he insists, as I said, he's a pharmaceutical rep. So he's like, all you have to do is just keep taking these weird blue toilet tablet vitamins that he's giving her. This'll flush away the crazy. You know, he puts them in a cup and it's just like makes it all blue. And I'm thinking, oh, so he subscribes to the Tom Cruise school of psychiatry is evil and Scientology solves all the things with vitamins and OT powers. I guess he's that kind of dude. Yeah, he's really kind of a shit. But she's kind of stopped taking them. She thinks they're not working. And, you know, it's just playing with the tidy bowl man hasn't been, like, working. Not really doing her any damn good, at least in her perception. So she finally takes her sister Barbara's advice, and she goes to see the psychiatrist that Barbara works for, who is this kindly old man named Dr. Burton. Now, Doc actually seems a lot more understanding. He actually, like, listens to her concerns. When she tells him, like, she goes to see him and she's like, oh my god, I saw this creepy man, like, in the waiting room. And he's like, oh, no, you didn't, because I don't let my clients, like, meet each other. But then when he goes out and Barbara says, oh, yeah, there was, like, a creepy man, like, sitting in here, he actually apologizes. Oh, I'm sorry, I owe you an apology. You did see a man out here. You're not crazy. You're not imagining things. And he tells her, like, over and over that she's not crazy, and it seems to be, like, helping her out a little bit. But even though he does seem a lot more understanding and actually, like, listens to her, her nightmares aren't really going away. And what's worse, she starts to see the blue-eyed man from her dreams stalking her in real life, or at least that's what her perception is. Now, fearing that she might be going batshit insane, as you would, she finally, in desperation, I guess, confides in her foxy new neighbor, Mary, whose first suggestion, maybe among her first suggestions, literally within a day of meeting her, is for Jane to accompany her to a sabbat, you know, a black magic ritual. That should clear that whole mental illness thing right up. With the well-known healing power of Beelzebub, just come along to the sabbat, everything will be fine. It worked for me, Mary insists. And as I said, Jane is very desperate. Nothing she's doing is working. The nightmares are getting worse. And now she's kind of like fearing that her nightmares are starting to bleed into reality because she's seeing this man like on the train and following her in the park and stuff like that. But nobody else seems to see him really. So she's kind of thinking she's losing her marbles. So as I said, because she's desperate, she gives this whole black magic ritual thing about 10 seconds of thought before essentially going, yeah, sounds like a plan. So they end up going to this creepy mansion, and after a very festive afternoon of dog sacrifice, dog blood drinking, and gang rape, she seems right as rain again. So, you know, who knew? Alternative therapy. So yeah, but not so fast. In a stunning twist, it will surprise no one. Turns out that demonic cults headed by fey bearded men wearing fabulous gold press-on nails may not actually be conducive to one's overall mental well-being. Who'd have thought it? Not me, that's for sure. So from here on out, the movie kind of takes on, I mean, even more than previously, sort of like the aspect of a fever dream. as we're not really sure who we can trust and what's really going on, like what's real and what's just like a dream or a hallucination. Like, this blue-eyed psycho dude seems to be popping up around every corner, like lurking outside her apartment building, like following her around, you know, just kind of like stalking her pretty much constantly. But is he real or is he imaginary? Is she just like remembering him? Because like I said, he does turn up in her dreams, so you're led to believe maybe this was the guy that killed her mom and she's like remembering what he looks like, so now she's just like manifesting him and she's like imagining it all. Another thing is, you know, is everybody Jane knows like conspiring with this satanic cult to kind of like push her off her rocker or kill her or do some like have some other like nefarious purpose, you know? And it's just kind of like, it's one of those things where that's kind of where the giallo aspect comes in, because everyone's a suspect. Everyone is kind of like shifty. Everybody does stuff that's sort of like suspicious. So you're not really sure like who's in on it and who's not. There's a couple of like weird scenes where, you know what I mean? There's scenes where like Richard is kind of like looking at Mary, like before Jane even meets Mary, like he's looking at her through the window, like, hey, I see you. Hey, I see you. Like, there's something going on there. There's like some weird shit going on between him and the sister. Like, are they maybe sleeping together? I guess they're not, but it kind of like, they're kind of suggesting maybe there's something going on there. It's just really weird, like the way they set up all these things. There's this one fucking, this is one great scene where this is like so weird and like so ridiculous, but this kind of like lends the whole thing this sort of like surrealistic, like dreamlike kind of thing. There's one point where, you know, Jane is like freaking out so much that like this blue-eyed guy is like following her, that she goes to Doc Burton and he's like, tell you what, I'll take you out to my country house, because I have like a couple like housekeepers, like a married couple that take care of the property, and they'll like take care of you like while I'm working. It's like, so you won't be alone and you'll be safe because no one knows you're out here. So he takes her out there, but like then she wakes up the next morning and the caretakers, like this elderly couple, they look like they're sitting at the breakfast table like with the paper and everything like that, but they're dead. And I was like, would a murderer really go to all the trouble of just like murdering these two oldsters and then like meticulously like propping them up like with toast and orange juice and everything, so it looked, and the newspaper, so it looked like they were still alive, just to like fuck with her? But so, you know what I mean? So there's that kind of like thing, like, huh, is that really happening? So there's that. So the surrealistic touches from this point are kind of like coming hard and fast. And if you're watching it, you'll sort of be left confused and kind of like on edge until the very, until everything like sorts itself out. So while there are murders in the film, the plot isn't really a classic giallo murder mystery per se. As we pretty much know that the scary blue-eyed guy is the main villain and, you know, the guy that heads the cult like to a lesser extent. The suspense in this one is kind of generated more from the fact that the murders that do occur, you're not entirely sure if they really happened or if they happened the way that Jane perceived them to happen. You know, they might have been hallucinations, or it might have just been some other, like somebody might have dosed her. There's that kind of thing going on too. And we're also kind of drawn into the question of the extent to which the people in Jane's life, like in her immediate circle, like Richard, her sister Barbara, Dr. Burton, her neighbor Mary, the woman that takes her to the Sabbath, you know, how much and to what extent are they involved in this supposed plot by this satanic cult, we're led to presume, to harm her or whatever their agenda is? What connection is there to the murder of her mother many years ago? Because you know that there probably is one. So that's kind of like where the suspense and the tension of this one comes from. Not so much from one murderer going around like picking off a bunch of people, but just who's involved in this conspiracy? Is there a conspiracy? Is she just going crazy? That whole kind of thing. So as I mentioned, this is actually one of my favorite, I'm not sure, this might be actually my favorite Sergio Martino film. I'm not entirely sure. I really, really dig it a lot. I just, there's something about the whole like gloomy gothic vibe of it that really resonates with me, I guess. It's like, it has like this kind of weird like early 70s like psychedelic weirdness to it. It's very, very ambiguous, and I really like ambiguous films, especially ones that are kind of centered around paranoia, like, is everybody out to get me? You know, am I just like losing my mind? Like every single little thing that somebody does, every little piece of their behavior is just kind of like shifty, and you can read it like in lots of multiple ways, and I really like that about it. I mean, it had this really unsettling undertone of like claustrophobia, just like much like Rosemary's Baby, where, you know, the protagonist Jane, like, it seems like the whole world is like closing in around her. She can't really trust anybody. If she goes to somebody and talks to them, it ends up like fucking her over, at least in her perception. So I really, really like that aspect of, I really like movies that can pull that off successfully, which I think this one does. Cinematography in this one is also really lovely. It's very gloomy, very strange, very trippy, very grotesque. I really like a lot of the nightmare images. They're very, it's, you know, it's weird, like, fisheye lenses and shit. Like, it feels like you've been dosed or something like that. So, you know, it's not a traditional or a by-the-numbers type of giallo movie. So don't expect the usual hallmarks, like I said, like the mass killer and, like, the kind of police procedural aspect, because it doesn't really have that. But it's definitely unique, although, you know, like I said, it's on the fringes of giallo. It's usually called a giallo movie, and it is, but it's kind of like an outlier, I guess, because it's not exactly like a classic example of the genre. That said, I wouldn't hesitate to recommend it, not only to people that are really into giallo movies like me, but also to fans of those sort of like 70s era satanic panic, you know, cult movies, like the ones that came about after Rosemary's Baby, ones like that. If you like that kind of stuff and you like stuff with like really surrealistic or trippy visuals, then you will probably dig this one as well. So that will do it for this Flickers of Fear. Continuing on with Giallo July, we'll do another one next time, and I will see you on that one. Bye.